Hey everyone, it's Nellie here. How are you doing? I am just dropping in to remind you about our live show coming up in Melbourne for Ida Hobbit Day. Some of you came last year. We had a ball with Reuben Kay live in conversation at Comedy Republic, and this year is going to be just as fun. We're mixing it up and we're going to do story time. We're going to have stories from the LGBTIQA plus community. All of our cast will be over 40, and there will be a focus on love, on lust, on joy, on growth, on triumph, on all the good things. The lineup is amazing. Oh my God, the lineup. I mean, I will be hosting, obviously. We'll have Scott Brennan telling a story. We'll have the wonderful Geraldine Hickey. Dr. Kwa E. Ling is going to come down from Sydney and tell a story. Tina Del Twist will sing for us. And we have a very, very, very special surprise guest whose job, look, their job's so important, I'm actually not allowed to advertise their involvement, but let's just say they've got a long title, like longer than my CV. Watch this space. All the cast are funny. Ida Hobbit is a day to celebrate LGBTIQA plus rights, but I think part of that is celebrating our right to love. So this event is going to be all about joy. Do you need some bloody good news for once? Because I sure as shit know that I do. Everyone's welcome, including allies. So go to dearnellypodcast.com and you can follow the links to live shows, or obviously there's a link in the show notes every week, or you can go to comedyrepublic.com.au, which is where the event will be held. Now, this podcast was recorded in the council area known as Darabin in Melbourne. I would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land, the Wurundjeri people, and their elders past, present, and emerging. Last but not least, this is a sex, dating, and relationships podcast for adults. If you don't like swearing, I tell you what, it's really going to give you the shit. So off you fuck.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Dear Nellie, I could use some advice. Dear Nellie, yeah, some help would be nice. Dear Nellie, I'm eager to hear your point of view. There's a lot to explore, dear Nelly, when you're 40 or more, dear Nelly, so I'm hoping we can talk it through. Dear Nelly, I'm rocking my prime and it's time to get down some, maybe mess around some, it's never too late.
Welcome to Dear Nellie, Sex, Relationships and Dating from the Other Side of 40, and we are back for sloppy seconds with the one and only Danny Blay. Hello, Danny.
Hello, Nellie. Hope you're feeling better.
Oh, I'm getting there. Yeah, I reckon I'm maybe a week or two off full recovery.
Okay,
good. So I'll take that.
Go you.
Yeah, so what have you been up to since our last episode?
Oh, bits of work and bits of gardening and trying to make an old car work, and that's about it, really.
Oh, you're one of those guys that tinkers on a car for 20 years.
Much longer than 20 years, my friend.
Really?
Yeah.
What car is it?
This is a 1961 EK Holden that I bought the week I turned 21.
Oh, wow. And you're now 50?
56 as of last week.
Oh, you're 56 and you've had it since you're 21. I had a 1972 Datsun when I was 21. Had a cue ball for on the gear. Oh,
you're tough. You know why I have this car?
Why?
Because I had a brown station wagon before that, and this girl wouldn't go out with me because the car was ugly. And I knew that she loved green. So I sold that and I bought a green EK Holden. And then we have two children.
Oh, you bought this car for Sandy.
Yeah, our relationship is very sophisticated.
Oh, that is heaven. And how does she feel about you still tinkering on the car?
Oh, she loves it. She loves the old cars. She had an old car until she had a 1962 Morris Major Elite until she got pregnant with Maddie and she couldn't fit behind the steering wheel anymore.
Yeah.
But we'll try and get something back.
I was so sure that you were going to say she loves it because I get out of the house.
No, she's coming with me.
Now, just in case, I mean, heaven forbid that people didn't listen to your last episode, but let's reintroduce you because you are not, I mean, you're a bit showbiz, like you've done radio, but
Yeah.
you're not a comedian like a lot of my guests. So, what's your professional background?
My professional background is in responding to men who use violence against women and family violence. So I've been doing that for 25, 26 years. I'm a qualified men's behaviour change group facilitator and counsellor. And I do a lot of training. I ran the Peakbody No to Violence and the phone service, men's referral service, for 10 years. And now I work for myself as a freelancer and do a lot of training and a lot of policy development around this space.
Yeah. And just by way of background, you and I met. You helped me develop the No Means No show, which was a comedy show for young people about like consent and respect and all those things in the early 2000s.
Yes. It remains a highlight for me. It's just so special, those events and the people contributing to it. It was great.
It really was, and dare I say, tooting both our horns, it was groundbreaking. Like, I'm pleased to see that there is a bit more of that stuff happening now. But for those who are unfamiliar with the area, the idea is that prevention, requires a lot more focus than just dealing with the consequences of violence, that we try and get in there before it happens.
Yeah, and exposing young people to some of the concepts around it so they can start thinking about it and doing it in a really fun, engaging way,
Yeah, not a lecture.
including that icebreaker with the condoms and the boys blowing them up. I remember that one time where there was one young man who'd never seen one and had no idea how to open
Yes.
them, which was a bit unfortunate, but.
It, well, this is the thing, like it's destigmatizing that stuff, and you can do it in a fun way. So the idea for that is that you get a condom and you blow it up like a balloon. And really, if you look at it on from a health promotion point of view, like it's just fun. But it's actually about normalizing condom use. It's about this is how you take one out of the packet. It's about this is a reasonable and normal thing to have access to.
And the
Like,
punchline was,
yeah,
you
I
remember?
can't remember.
You can't remember? The punchline was, don't you ever say that the condom is too small for you.
Oh, that's right, because we blew them up huge because that was actually from the research that I had done with young women. Where, and this was the STI focus, where we're like, what is the barrier to using condoms? And a lot of it was cost or going into, I don't know, a pharmacy in a small town where you knew the pharmacist or whatever. But one of the other things that a lot of young women had been told was, oh, my penis is too big for to use a condom. Now, I think that perhaps there's one or two outliers, 0.01%, where that might be the case, but it's certainly not common, Danny.
No, it is not. And
No.
the manufacturers do know this.
Indeed. Indeed. Now, one of the things that I particularly loved and wanted to pick up on from your chat. So, you're what, mid-50s? Your kids are grown and flown, as they
Yes.
say. And you expressed, you know, I'm a sucker. I love when men express emotion ever. But I particularly loved you talking about the pain that you've experienced with your kids moving out. For two reasons. One, because it's a common experience of the audience, you know, of the of our podcast, but also because usually we hear women talking about it. And it's not often that in the public sphere that we hear men talking about it. So can you explain to me what is empty nesting? What does it feel like? And we'll go from there.
Yeah. Well, essentially, it's the feeling of, grief and loss and loneliness that parents can feel when their children move out of the family home. That can be just to go live on their own or go and higher education or travel or whatever it might be. It's certainly not a clinical condition. And obviously, young adults have been moving out of their families' houses for years, for generations. So it's normal and it's healthy and it's great. And, I remember at the time when my daughter moved out, thinking, had she still been around in her mid to late 20s or 30s, then, that might be a bit of an issue. I want her to go out and experience the life that Sandy and I had when we moved out in our early 20s and share and stuff. It was awesome. The thing that we, or at least I, found really profound at the time was it was a bit of an ambush. So yeah, my daughter came home Saturday afternoon. How was your day? Yeah, really good. We looked at a few houses and flats, and we think we found the one we want. And I was like, sorry, excuse me, what? What's all that about? And it was, I knew intrinsically, consciously, intellectually that my daughter, my children would move out of the family home. I did not in any way think about what that was going to be like for us, for me, how that would feel. And it's nothing awful, to be perfectly honest. It happened. And the conflicting emotions around, is it fair that I even feel this? This is not about me. This is about her going on her merry journey, versus, that kind of grief and loss stuff. And immediately, recalibrating and reassessing what it means to be a parent. But it's not as if when my children moved out, they were still needy children and I had to do it for them. They were off doing their own stuff anyway. But the symbolism of them not coming home at night was, a big deal for me.
Oh, I totally understand. I mean, there's many things that I can relate to in that. I think one of them is the you can know something intellectually, right? In a way, it's like the entry point and exit point. You can know when you have children that life's about to change. You can't have any real idea, I think, of how much it will change and how much you will change until you're in the experience. And it's no doubt the same on the other end. So you can kind of go, okay, my kids leaving home is going to be a big moment. It's probably going to be conflicted because there'd be part of you, I assume, who's proud of them for going, who's happy to have some space, who, is celebrating it, and another part of you kind of going, oh, what do I do now? Like, I'm so sad. Why am I even allowed to be sad?
And there's constant reminders that that's happened. So even really mundane things like doing the laundry and going shopping and preparing meals and all that kind of stuff takes a whole lot of relearning. You open your fridge and it's only half full, and it's like, oh yeah, that's why I get that now. That takes some getting used to, for at least for me and for a lot of people. There are a lot of my friends and peers who haven't really reported that this is a big deal for them, and I don't know if they're covering up for that or not. But for us, it was a big deal.
And I think, I mean, there's something, and this is not meant to be judgmental of anybody else, because who knows whether they just are having a different experience or what, who can say? But I think it's pretty clear to me, like you and Sandy, and since I'm talking to you in particular, are very dedicated parents, and you've spent a lot of time with your kids, and you've traveled with your kids, and you've been very involved in their lives. So even on a, you're not Disney dad, you know what I mean? Like, you're not just there Friday nights. So having that kind of relationship shift, it would be to me no different as if Sandy moved out and you saw her once a week. You know what I mean? Like, it's a big shift.
The routine becomes very, very different very quickly. Normality shifts a lot.
So what's the thing that happened that you least expected?
Yeah, it's that grief and loss stuff, that sadness I did not expect at all. It was, and One of the things that we were reflecting on at the time when we were feeling a bit shit about it all was that it would probably have felt easier for us if Maddie had moved interstate or overseas instead of down home. She was literally, a 7 minute drive from our joint. So knowing she was just over there, over a few streets that way, and wondering what was going on, we found much harder than if she was living in Darwin or New York or something.
And why do you think that is? What is it?
No,
It's because
just.
she's so close.
So the impetus, the need to maybe just go and drop in and go say hi or catch up for coffee, whatever it might be. I don't know. Again, this is all irrational. And like a lot of, emotional responses, it's not really based on anything particularly rational. So it just felt like that if she'd gone off somewhere further, then that physical distance may have been a bit easier to cope with.
Well, and can I say, I think it's really important, and I know that you subscribe to this model as well. You don't mean irrational in the pejorative. Like irrational, you mean you're having an emotional response. It's for some reason, it's reminding me of something. I won't say who it was, but someone in my life was particularly jealous of a certain thing that happened. And I was talking to my therapist about it, and she's like, yeah, so let them be jealous. Like it's okay. Like it do you don't have to, I don't have to shit can them for being jealous. I don't have to accept, I don't have to change my behavior either. But you can honor the emotional response. It'll pass. And it makes sense to me emotionally that when your daughter is so close, it's like you can almost touch her. She's so close, but you can't have her, that is really painful.
And then, weighing that up with whose needs am I actually thinking about here? What's in the best interest of my children now that they have moved out? Do I want to smother them? Do I want to see them every day and have dinner with them every night? Well, yeah, that'd be cool. Is that going to be particularly healthy for them? No, it's not. If I was expected to do that when I moved out, it would have been awful.
And it's probably not healthy for you or Sandy either, to
No.
be fair. You know what I mean? There is a point at which we see this, and obviously, just for the nature of this podcast, I've seen this in some callers, and I've even seen it in friends where they break up with someone and then they're still catching up 3 or 4 times a week. And you kind of go, I understand the impetus because you still love that person on some level and you're very familiar with them and it's comfortable. But how on earth are you ever going to actually move on if you're still that sort of intertwined? So it's not about the feeling being wrong. It's about what do I do with the feeling?
Precisely.
And so Maddie was what, 20 something? And like, how old were the kids when they moved out?
23, Raph was 20. Although during the long lockdown we had in Melbourne, Raph and some mates moved out immediately just before, like the afternoon of the lockdown. So we didn't see them for quite some time. So, but when Raph officially moved out of the family home, it was easier than when Maddie did because we had now experienced it and we would we learned I certainly learned the need to prepare for it long before it actually happens. So the preparation happened when Maddie moved out. And so I did a lot of work on myself just to recognize what that preparation should look like.
You took ownership of it. So for one thing that's rattling around in my brain before I forget, I know there's people listening going, I wish my kids would move out. Like we hear the opposite where the kids are still home at, 30 and won't do their own washing, but we'll park that. Let's try and help. There'll be a lot of people, and I'm one of them, who on some level this will happen to at some point. How do you think you prepare for it? Like, how do you navigate it, or do you just have to sit in the shit?
No, there's a lot of preparation you can do. One of the first ones for me is have a think about what your house is going to sound like when your children aren't around. So even there, if they're adults, What's it going to sound like when you don't hear bedroom doors opening and closing, or when you don't hear the shower going, or the flashing of the toilet, or the chatter going on the other end of the house, or the kettle boiling, or
Oh,
their friends,
Danny, this
all
is
that
why I
kind
love you. This is
of
fascinating to me that that would be the first thing. That's
Yeah, so
amazing.
I'm very auditory. I have music going all the
Yeah.
time. I listen to music all the time. So, in hindsight, the surprise that I had of this house being very, very silent was really confronting and quite astounding.
Yeah.
And
Yeah.
so, to think about that experience is going to be like before your kids even suggest that they're going to be moving out, I think can be really important.
Can I just
It's in
interrupt there for one second? Because this, I find this fascinating for two reasons. One, I've been to your lovely house and I know you've got vinyl, and I would have just imagined you like rocking around with your records on full blast. But then the other thought I had straight after that was, this is reminding me of the first night after separation that I didn't have the kids. And I
Right.
thought to myself, oh, because I only had one night a week to myself at that point. So I was like, I can't wait. I want to like put my music on and I want to eat whatever I want. And I was so fucking sad because it was just quiet. Like I've adjusted to that now. I actually appreciate a day when I've got quiet. But geez, it's a huge shock to the system when all the sensory things, it's quiet, it smells different, it sounds different, all the senses are to almost not shut down, but you notice all of it.
It's very, very present in your face. Thinking about what your home will look like when your children aren't around, thinking about not having clothes and shoes lying around, or half glasses of water, or what do you do with your empty bedrooms? Like we found one of the empty bedrooms that we suddenly had got filled up with junk immediately. It's just shit everywhere. And we weren't really strategic about that at all. So we had to be a lot more conscious about what we're doing with our space, and that also led to the capacity for us to extend ourselves whilst we didn't have children here to do other stuff. So we have our separate offices, and we have a little bit of a library going as well. And thinking about what you're saying about thinking about what it feels like to be with our children. So one of the big triggers for me was folding up laundry, and not putting it, on the kids' beds when I've done the laundry, or just what it feels like to go shopping for two people, or one person. How different is that? Plays with your kind of sense of identity about what you're actually doing here, who you're doing it for, and how come I'm only doing it for myself, or me and my partner.
You know why, Danny? I reckon it's because love and care are in the little things. So those little things that, I mean, I always, as many parents do, get frustrated with laundry. It's like some Sisyphean task that never bloody ends. But I also know when I'm not doing the laundry for them anymore, I'll be sad. Like I know that because it's an act of love.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So the fact that you recognize that now and you're thinking about what that's going to feel like, hopefully will make it a bit easier.
Well, now I'm also thinking, and I don't mean this in the negative, I'm trying to reframe this in the positive. Even thinking of my house, for example, my older daughter's 17 next year. I don't know when she'll move out, but let's say it's within a few years. I'm going to start thinking about what would I use that room for?
Yeah,
You
that's
know,
great.
like, and in the positive, like, would I make it into an office? Would I make it into a library? I don't know if you're into sewing, have a sewing room. Like, what is your, can you bring a hobby into it? Do you get a flatmate? Do you bring an international student in? Do you like whatever it is, like start thinking about kind of fantasizing about possibilities rather than that shock of going, oh shit, I'm going to fill it up with junk and feel terrible.
I
Can
like
I
that a lot.
ask, and this is a very personal question, so you go as deep or as not as you want. Did it have an effect on your marriage? Because you've been married for what, over 30 years? You've had kids for most of that time. How did it affect how you two related to each other?
It's hard to say because By the time they moved out, they weren't spending huge amounts of time here anyway. They were going out, seeing bands, and catching up with friends and all that. So it was more about the symbolism of what had happened. That, and we have been talking for a long time before the kids moved out. We've been talking a long time about, okay, what's the next bit of our lives? And, talking about travel or living in the bush somewhere or whatever it might be, down by the beach. So that kind of planning or semi-planning has been going on for a while. So it wasn't that profound, but we would just kind of bump into each other quite often in the early days, in this quiet house, going, "This is really freaking weird." And, just had to be quite conscious of reinventing or inventing some new routines that were based around, the kids being here, or expecting them to walk in the door.
Now, let me ask, because I know which I adore about both of you. You two dance, right? So, was dance part of this transition?
No, we haven't done that for quite some time. But it's something that, we've talked about. We might go and do it again. The COVID stuff makes it a little bit tricky, but look, there's a lot of those kinds of things that we've been thinking about, that we can rekindle and have fun with, and particularly with the notion that we have very fond memories of when our kids were little and we would dance in front of them, and they'd be absolutely fucking horrified. Furious.
Because this
It's
is
so bad.
like, explain the kind of dance that you do. It's fancy.
It was swing dancing. So it was the revival of swing music and big bands and stuff that happened in the, what, in the 2000s. We started going to classes and having fun around that. We kind of stopped because we stopped the classes because we kind of got a bit too good. And the better you, well, it's because the better you got, the later the classes started. And so finally our classes were starting at 9:30, and it's like, oh man, we're getting old. But we can kind of do that now.
All right, I'm going to move us on to a listener letter that is a tricky one. I've given it to you for obvious reasons. I'm going to read out the letter and then I'd like to know your response.
Okay.
Hi, Nellie. I still listen to every episode and get something new to ponder in each one. That's lovely. Thank you. My adult son, who is married and has two daughters, appears to have a lot of narcissistic tendencies and gaslights his wife all the time. It's really challenging for me as it's my son, and I can't quite believe he's turned out this way. I'm struggling a little as the feminist in me wants to protect my daughter-in-law and my two granddaughters, but I obviously also have loyalty to my son. I'm not really sure how to navigate the situation. My daughter-in-law is very unhappy, but is scared to have conversations with him about his behaviour. My husband and I have always said we'll call it out when we see it, but he's always on his best behaviour around us or when we're in a big group of people and we can't call it out. My son has some demons from his past that I think he is fighting, but I also know there is no way he will consider therapy. He's a boy's boy, in brackets, misogynistic male, and thinks he is fine and knows best about everything. I see a lot of myself in my daughter-in-law, especially when I was with my son's dad. Maybe I need to speak up more to my son, but I can't break the trust with his wife, so I'm left not knowing if there's anything I can do. I just listened to your episode, and in this, she's referring to the episode that you and I did recently, asking, is anyone scared in your home? And I would say she is scared of my son. I don't think he would physically touch her or the kids, but he is nasty, mean, and argues in a way that you feel like you can't get out of the situation. Justifies his behavior and actions in odd ways, obsesses over certain words, has fast comebacks, etc. I've loved all your advice about what to do if you're in a relationship like this or even as a friend, but I need to navigate this as a mum with my son. Please help if you can. Thanks, Nellie. Look forward to your sage advice. Ooh, Danny, talk to me.
Nellie, you're not going to be surprised when I tell you, when I say to you, that our paramount concern here is around safety.
Correct, around his wife and children.
Exactly. So the big points there that your correspondent mentioned is that her daughter-in-law is scared. And that her son is on his best behavior when other people are around. It's very, very typical of experience of women who are experiencing family violence. And that can be very difficult for your correspondent to hear. But I'm concerned for the safety of her daughter-in-law and her granddaughters from what she has described. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that they are in fact in danger, because obviously I don't know these people, I've never seen them.
In physical danger.
In physical danger. I don't know that. But there is an obvious concern, and here's why. I work with men who use violence towards women and family members. Now, what the research clearly tells us is that family violence usually doesn't start with physical violence or sexual violence. It starts usually with verbal and psychological abuse. So the put downs, the admonishments, the teasing, the bullying, the gaslighting, as you said. And that can move on to other kinds of family violence and abuse. It can be financial abuse, so start misusing money and withholding money. It can be social abuse and preventing family members and partners from seeing other people, or forcing them to engage in certain social situations. So there's a range of other forms of family violence that we clearly know and have a lot of research and evidence around. And if people want to know more about that, I encourage you to go to ourwatch.org.au and you can read up about what that stuff looks like. I acknowledge that your correspondent wants to be loyal to her son, but I really wouldn't recommend that she engages with her son or tries to challenge him about his behaviours. And that's because this could put her daughter-in-law at heightened risk,
Right,
because he might.
bingo. Can I interrupt here, Danny? Because this is, I reckon, the vast majority of listeners, and I understand this instinct, and you do too. The vast majority of listeners immediately get on the defense. And even my own reaction, even, and I knew you'd say this, and that's why I wanted you to do this letter. My own reaction is, right, you get in there with that guy and you give him a fucking talking to and you go in hard. And then my next thought was, and then what happens when you leave?
That's exactly right. So, yeah, look, as an aside, when I'm training seasoned qualified therapists about this stuff, a lot of their initial response is, I'm going to tell him like it is. He needs to stop doing it. We know that that is dangerous, because he might start thinking that his partner's now confiding in other people,
Yeah, and
and that
take it out on her.
and there's going to be retribution. That this is where it gets really tricky. It'd be a lot easier if we could just front up to these guys and say, hey, mate, stop being a prick. And yeah, okay, no worries. And away you go. It doesn't work that way at all. So I wouldn't recommend your correspondent engaging with him about this, because, yeah, this could put her daughter even more risk, and the children potentially as well. I would, though, recommend having a quiet chat with her daughter-in-law to raise her concerns about the daughter-in-law and the children, and saying to her that you feel scared about what might happen. Now, again, that feels disloyal to the son, but our primary concern is always safety. And again, knowing that things can quite easily escalate. So for her daughter-in-law to hear that her mum-in-law is saying, I'm scared for you and grandchildren, can be quite empowering and motivating to start thinking a bit differently about her circumstance and taking some action.
Can we establish one thing very clearly, and you correct me if I'm wrong, but my read from the letter and from what you've said, based on the information we have and no more, like even if there is no, if he has never hit, pushed, slapped, any variation of physical violence, this is still an abusive relationship.
Oh, absolutely. Look, yes, this is not on. This is not healthy. It is unsafe. So we already know that they're down the track of this being significantly inappropriate, dangerous behavior. It's not to be dismissed as, oh, that's just the way he is. He just has to let off steam. It's, that's just the way that he was when he popped out or whatever it might be.
And to be
No.
fair, I don't think Mum's doing that. Like, I think the reason she's written in, and the other thing that occurred to me, Danny, so I think, as you know, one of my kids was badly bullied a couple of times. And it occurred to me, I remember thinking at that time, the only thing worse than this would be if my kid was the bully. Like, this
Yeah.
is a really, really painful situation for this mum to be in. I think she knows this is abusive. From the sounds of it, she may have experienced this also from his dad. I'm just
Maybe.
reading between the lines. And that is really painful. And I just want to acknowledge that it is, what's a word that's not patronizing? I keep thinking courageous. It's courageous of her to be able to look at this clearly and go, what my son's doing is wrong, rather than, I don't think she is defending him.
No, and you can also take the line that this might actually be really good for him if there is some kind of professional intervention and he does get referred to a proper service where he can start having chats about the impact of his behaviour on ostensibly the people he loves the most. So in Australia, we talk about men's behaviour change programs that are very much feminist based on the safety of women and children. And a lot of men pop out the other end of those programs, feeling like the burden of having to be a real bloke has been lifted, and they can actually be safe around their family and learn different ways of behaving that's not going to put people at risk.
Can we
So that.
assume, just based on her letter, and I don't think this is a fait accompli, that's one option. Let's assume she knows that he will never do that. What's her best move? You think it's to talk to the daughter-in-law and say, this is what I'm seeing. I'm worried for your safety. That explicit or different?
Yeah, no, I think that's fine. What you don't do is start telling her what she has to do,
No, 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 no.
or try and
No.
fix things herself. So the message is, I'm really worried about you and the children, and I suggest that maybe you want to have a confidential chat with someone who knows a lot more about this stuff than I do. And in Australia, that'd be the first port of call is 1800 RESPECT, 1800 737 732, confidential 24/7 response, just to talk things through and get some clarity and some ideas of what next steps might be.
Can I
You,
put
you.
something to you and then I want you to tell me and be really blunt because I won't take it personally if I get it wrong, right? I just want imagining myself in her position. I'm thinking I'd go to the daughter-in-law and say, I want to chat to you about. Let's call him Bob. I want to chat to you about Bob. I'm asking you to please keep this between us because I want to be able to have these conversations with you.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
See his behavior, it concerns me. I want you to know two things. If you want help and you want more information, I will do that with you and I will help you find it. And I also want you to know you'll always be part of our family, even if he's not in your life.
Yep,
Or is
they
that
are.
too far?
No, look, I think for someone to hear that means that someone is actually looking out for them.
Yes.
Someone has their best interests at heart, that they're not siding with their biological child just because that's who it is. And the message that I'm happy to go and do some research for you and just find out some info, can alleviate, a lot of the pressure and a lot of the stress. You know, even stress about making phone calls from home if you're being tracked and that kind of stuff. Well, I don't have to do that. I'll let mum-in-law do it. That can
But
be
also
really.
there's no sense in that of you should. Right? You should move out into my house. You should get an apartment. I'll pay for it. You should, even if you're being generous, you're still bossing her around. Whereas
Yeah,
I think going and saying, can I help you?
the last thing she needs is to be told what to do because she's had a gut full of it already for a long time. We can
Correct.
assume. What she does need is to make some informed decisions about her next step. And the way she can do that is to chat with some people who understand what this looks like. For a lot of women who experience this kind of environment, this behavior from male partners is extremely isolating, and it can feel like it's unique. It doesn't happen to other people, to normal people, when we know it's extremely common. And so
Well, and
we
'cause
know.
Danny, they hide it. Like Mum has said that herself, right? Whether he's a diagnosed narcissist or not. There is very, very few abusers, but particularly if he is a narcissist, they are very good at being the life of the party at the barbecue and then terrorizing you at home.
I remember a bloke that I worked with in a behaviour change program many years ago now, who was quite upfront and said that he could be a real asshole at home, but if there was a knock at the door, and this is a direct quote, he said, "I would become Mr. Nice Guy."
Oh, wow.
He could turn it on and off as much as he wanted. So, I mean, this talks more about, how many men will choose to use violence and abuse when it suits them, and to turn it off when it doesn't suit them in case they might get detected.
Do you know what that occurs to me as well? And I'll be careful with privacy, but someone close to me said the exact same thing about her mum, right? And as a child, I'm thinking of the children in this situation, that her mum was very cold, distant, abusive, those kinds of words, until there was a visitor. And that she didn't realize until she was well into her 30s that why she always wanted other people around. Because it was like this reflexive action of, well, if other people are there, everyone's happy because we put on a show. So what are the kids seeing?
Yes, exactly. And I mean, that's another aspect of it. A lot of men will respond to any kind of questioning or intervention around this stuff and say, "Look, I'm a really good dad.
Dad,
What are you talking about? I'm a great provider, and they like to hang around with me and all that kind of stuff." My response to that is, can you be a good dad if you're abusing their mum?
If your mum's scared of you.
That's not being a good dad.
Also, the children must be on some level waiting for that switch, right? If he is a different kind of personality when Nana and Granddad are there, and then mean and nasty, using the words in the letter, and argumentative when they're gone, the kids see that. So, what are
Absolutely.
they learning?
And we know the research is very clear about the impact of family violence on children, even if the children don't see it, even if they're not
Yes.
there.
Yes.
There is still an impact. They still know something's happening, that something's not on, that mum's scared. That has an impact.
Yes. Can I just say, because I'm really conscious of, I'm thinking of the letter writer. Can I just be really clear to the letter writer? Neither Danny or I are criticizing you when we're
No,
talking
absolutely.
about this behavior. These are choices that your adult son is making, and you actually can't magic wand fix this. What if she's worried? Because my concern is if she pulls the daughter-in-law aside, that the daughter-in-law tells her husband, and that then isolates her from them.
Yeah, look, an easy-ish kind of fix around that is pulling the daughter-in-law aside and say, "Look, I want to have a chat with you about something important. Is it okay if this remains confidential, or will you might talk to your partner about this? I want to talk to you about what's going on at home. Is it okay if this just stays between you and me?" She says, "No, I don't know. I think I might want to chat with him." Then we might want to pull the curtains down there and then, because that. Where it starts, the risk starts escalating if he starts finding out what mum's talking about and all that kind of business.
Well, and then she might come back to you in a month, 6 months, a year, and go, actually, I do want to have that chat now, and I will keep it between us. Yeah, I think that's good.
She knows then that someone's looking out for her, got her best interests at heart and her children. I might take up that offer.
Yeah. And I think don't be, and again, Danny, please correct me if I've got this wrong, but for mum, the letter writer, don't be afraid to be as explicit as you have been in your letter. I think it's perfectly reasonable to say to your, if your daughter-in-law says, "What do you mean? Like, what are you noticing?" Say, "I think he's mean. I think he's nasty in the way that he talks to you. I feel like you're scared of him and that he's not healthy. And I'm worried for you, and I'm worried for your safety."
Yeah, I'd probably temper that just a little bit. I probably wouldn't say I think he's mean and nasty
Okay.
because she's going to feel immediately conflicted. You're talking about my partner here, my life
Yeah,
partner.
okay.
This is a bloke that I fell in love with and, was fun to be around. I think it's enough to say I'm scared about what's going on and what might happen.
Excellent. Okay. I'm so glad that you challenged me on that because I think the instinct might be, or certainly was mine, is to name the behaviors. But I think you're right. Then you get into a loop of her defending him and being defensive because it is the father of her children and the man that she's still married to. So it's enough. Keep it simple and go, "I'm concerned for your safety," or is that too far?
No, I think that's enough. I'm concerned for your safety. I'm scared about what might happen,
Yeah.
is enough. And, in 2024, we now have the luxury of having significant support and advice and expertise who can then extend that out and have gentle conversations that aren't going to increase any risk. And, leave it to them to have those chats if daughter-in-law is happy to make the call.
Great. And I will put in the show notes. I'll get some resources from Danny. I'll put the all that information in the show notes and also on our website, which is dearnellypodcast.com, and make sure that you've at least got a few resources where you can start and you can get some help. You don't have to navigate this all on your own.
Definitely not.
There's help out there. Thank you, Danny. All right, are you ready? I'm so sorry, I'm giving you the hard ones. Are you ready for a listener call?
Yep, go for it.
Hi, Nellie. It's Mel here. I love, love, love the po podcast so much. And I've only just recently discovered it, so I'm playing catch up. But I love every episode and I resonate with every episode so far. So I've been sitting in the shit for 12 years. As you would say, since my last relationship with a man who's the father of my child finished. It was emotionally abusive. It was a shit show. It had overtones of coercive control. It all happened so fast within 6 months. We had great chemistry. Sex was amazing. Couldn't get enough of each other. But the downside was he gaslit me. He lied to me. He had a completely different mask on during our relationship, and it came off at the end of our relationship when I'd been getting counselling on how I could make it work. Anyway, it turned out that he used to follow me on my walking my dog. My dog never liked him, as it turned out. Anyway, and then when we broke up and I finally got him out of my house, he called me like 50 times a day. Eventually, I got to the point I actually just told him that I'd had an abortion. Please, no judgment. Anyway, so that was 12 years ago. I've been sitting in the shit for all the time. I've sexually totally shut down, and the idea of dating or being naked in front of anybody has absolutely scared the shit out of me. I've totally focused on my daughter.
Now, the call cut out there, but oh, can I just say again, it's so hard, Danny, to have conversations in this space without feeling patronizing, but I just want to genuinely say I'm just really proud of her for calling in and for actually being able, like, that must have been a bloody hard call to make. Those things are really hard to experience, let alone then say out loud. So I thank you sincerely for calling in. What do you hear?
It's completely understandable,
Correct.
having shut down and the idea of dating being really scary,
Yeah.
obviously because she doesn't want the experience to be repeated. I'm just wondering whether it might be of any use, if she learned a bit about what some of the warning signs might look like. if she does want to actually go out on dates. And that's really tricky because, again, as we said just before, men can be on their best behavior until they're not.
Yeah. Well,
I
that's such a common story, Danny, isn't it? And when she outlined, and I wish I could ask her more, that first 6 months, glorious. Couldn't get enough of each other. The sex was amazing. I bet he was bloody putting in his best foot forward. Love bombing, all of that kind of stuff. Humans, like, don't feel stupid for not seeing it, is what I'm saying. Human beings respond to that romance.
Look, I think dating in and of itself is a risky business
Yeah.
because you don't know where this is going to go.
Yeah.
I'm really reluctant to suggest that maybe just have a go and see what happens kind of thing, because it can be obviously really stressful and even maybe traumatizing if you're putting yourself in that position. So I don't know, maybe there might be some virtue in going out as a group with some friends, trusted friends, and seeing how that goes and see if if you're feeling more comfortable hanging around with people where a single or a man might approach you and want to buy you a drink, however that works. I'm finding this very difficult to provide some, clear strategic advice, obviously, because there's a risk involved. At the
Oh,
same, by
don't
the
worry,
same,
Danny, I'll do that.
okay.
I'm more than
By
happy
the same
to do
fact,
that.
I'd like to hope that most men out there, most single men of a certain age, aren't pricks, and they're just wanting to, restart and be nice. I have a few friends of my generation, women, who have started intimate relationships in the last few years with men of our age as well, and it's proven really beautiful and lovely. It is possible. Of course, you're going to have your wits about you and your suspicions. But I don't think there's, I can't really think of anything, any kind of strategy that's going to alleviate that if you want to put yourself out there.
I think it, yeah, I mean, I agree. Look, I think there's a couple of paths forward. Because I think the first thing she wants, and this is the reason I gave you the call, and we've given you this, but I want to do it again, to validate how she feels. It is a completely reasonable and normal response if you have been in a coercive, controlling, if you've been in an abusive relationship, and you've then been, I'm going to use this word, you've then been stalked after. So the abuse continued even when the relationship ended. It is completely reasonable for you to have then gone, I'm fucking out of there. Like, I am not doing that again. I'm going to focus on my kid. I'm going to focus on myself to shut down parts of you that could put you at risk, i.e., your sexuality. It sounds to me like now she is in a position of going, maybe I'm ready to dip my toe back in the water. And that's also great. Like, to me, that is a sign that maybe you've done a lot of the healing, and you might be starting to feel ready. And that doesn't mean 0 to 100. That doesn't mean you're going to go and find a husband. But it sounds to me like you're ready to activate that part of yourself again that wants to be desired, that wants to have connection, that wants to have romance, whatever that means to you. And I think that's lovely.
Slow steps can be really useful. And if you do end up seeing a man and all you do is go out for dinner or drinks or coffee or whatever, and starts agitating and saying, "Come on, let's get it on," and you're not
Done.
ready, it's not the one.
Yeah, off you fuck, as we would say. So my concrete advice, and I think I understand what Danny's saying in terms of not trying to direct you, but I'm going to do it, which is I reckon you are ready for dating. I think slowly and surely. You don't have to be, because I think the narrative we get into, any of us who have experienced abuse, we can get into a paradigm where we think I can't date again until I'm fixed. And the underlying assumption there is that you're broken, right? Yeah. You're not broken. None of us are fully fixed. None of us are fully broken. Are you well enough? Are you in a good enough space to just gently start going into dating again? My impression from your call is that you are, really slowly. So I'm talking, as Danny said, go on some dates, go on some coffee dates. Don't go on, and I'm going to be really specific, don't go on late night, I'll meet you for a cocktail at 10 dates. You go on daytime coffees, you go on lunch, maybe you go on a dinner, you catch up, you get any pressure at all, just leave. Right? You're older now. You are, hopefully you listen to this podcast. You do not have to be apologetic about boundaries. If someone says something that bothers you, you leave. Thank you so much. I need to go now.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And if you find, and I agree with you, they are there. If you find someone who can sit with where you are, that's a really big green flag.
Yeah.
Who can take it slow.
Agreed.
I reckon if you sat on it, let's say you went on a few dates with a bloke, I'd be very careful not to over-disclose initially, because I've been on both sides of that and I think it can be really problematic. But if you've been on 3, 4, 5, 6 dates, I think it's then fair enough to go, oh, I take it, you know, I need to take this slow for a reason. I've had some bad experiences.
Yep.
Now, again, that doesn't mean that's up to you whether you go into detail or not. But just see how he responds to that. Because if he's there for just a casual thing, he'll leave at that point. And that's okay. He can go, you know now. If he's able to hold space for you and your experiences, he'll stay and he'll wait until you're ready.
Yep. And you will have your own judgments and assessments around what that looks like.
And I think, and again, I totally with you, Danny, like it's that preventative stuff. It so easily tips into victim blaming and it's a really fine line to walk. But the thing I will say is it, when she said, oh my God, it was all, you know, it was a, I don't know, fireworks and it was really intense and it went really quick. And I bet they moved in together quickly and all that kind of stuff. It is really important at our age, I think, to just sit back and kind of go, my waters are stirring at that. I like it because it's nice to be desired and it's beautiful to have someone say that and to invest in you. But it's also, it's certainly an amber flag if it's not red.
Yeah.
Moving too quick.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I reckon she's ready. My direct advice would be to let friends know that you're ready and see if they know anyone, because that's also, it's not a guarantee by any stretch, but you might feel like it's a bit safer if it's a friend of a friend or a colleague or there's some connection rather than jumping into the apps, for example.
Yeah, and I have no idea what that experience looks like, the apps, so take it from you. But whatever works.
I mean, it's a mixed bag. I mean, it's an interesting one because I mean, I'm actually thinking in like, I'm thinking out loud here because if you, once you have been on the apps for a while or even initially, you have got some physical distance. So it can actually feel a bit safer in a way. Mm-hmm. Like you can start asking, let's say she matches with someone and she starts asking questions. And I don't mean an interrogation, but, you know, over a bit of a chat, if he says something that triggers a response in her that she doesn't like, well, you can end the chat and you're not sitting across from each other in a dinner. You know, one of my favorite bits of advice is from a TikToker that my daughter showed me. And she said, ask when you match with someone, what's your most controversial opinion? Right. So if he then, which I think is a great like second or third question, if he then is like, well, Trump's just telling the truth, or I think, you know, women's rights have gone too far, or whatever it is for you, you'll have to have your own thing. But that actually might be a protective question. in a way. If he starts going, "Oh, me too's a bit of a load of bullshit," I'm out of here, mate. So maybe she is ready. I would, either way, I would love her to call back in because I would genuinely like to know how she feels about what we've said, whether or not she
Yes.
does feel ready to like maybe go on a date. Can I just say, girlfriend, as well? Oh my God, there is nothing nicer, particularly when you're going back into dating, than a passion dash. Like, as Danny said, you maybe you just go for coffee or whatever, but even the idea of you saying, "I'm worried about being naked in front of someone," you don't have to, right? You can have a smooch on a park bench. You can hold hands, you know, slowly, slowly. And if he won't do that, he's not for you. Any pressure, get out of there. All right, we're going to end on big mistake, Danny. What is, do you think, the biggest mistake that you see in dating and relationships from the grand old age of, what are we now, 56?
Yeah.
What do you reckon? Old
Look,
man?
oh man, back in my day,
Mm.
I don't know, it's something about, and we were just talking about it just now, but it's something about rushing into things,
Mm.
feeling the pressure that you have to be partnered,
Yes.
or that you have to be sexually active.
Yes.
And it's something also about, I found one and he's really into me, so I need to work on being into him or her.
Oh, he likes me. That's enough.
And I
Yes.
know from my peers who became single that there was that pressure of I need to find someone and find someone quite quickly, otherwise I'm going to get really old and lonely and that's going to be awful. And making concessions around that stuff. I think it's about, for people having a think about what is going to be acceptable for them in a partner and how much, what are going to be the concessions I'm going to make to try and make it work, if any.
Oh, 100%. And it's that thing, and this is really relevant actually to the caller. I can't stand when you see the like influencers or whatever, and they've got a list that's got 100 criteria of, oh, he has to have this income and she has to have this waist size and da da. Like, all that stuff's bullshit. But particularly when you've come from, if you've got any kind of trauma background, but I think even in general, make a list of deal breakers and actually honor them. So if he says this, if she does this, if they do it, don't debate it with yourself, end it. And do that before the date. So you know what your line is, because you can, you know, as we know, a lot of trauma responses, the fight, flight, freeze, it might also be fawn. Oh, I'll win you over. I've got to like you. I've got to make you like me, all that kind of stuff. Have that little list, check it. Even if you wrote down in her case, what were the characteristics of your ex that you hated the most? You see those in on a date, you leave. There is that real pressure to kind of go 0 to 100. And particularly, Danny, if you've been in a relationship, doesn't even have to have been abusive. If you've been in a relationship where you felt neglected, you know, or you weren't desired, and I don't even necessarily mean sexually, I mean generally, you are very vulnerable to even the smallest bit of attention. And that's not enough. It's not enough for someone to go, "You're pretty," you know, or "You're funny." Like, there's got to be more to them than that.
And also acknowledging what your desire to try and meet someone new, is that because that's for you or that's the pressure that society's pushing around that you can't be single?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Please consider whether or not you actually want to live on a commune in Dalesford. Because actually, I'm, you know, hashtag speaking for a friend. You sit down seriously, and again, I'd say this to the caller and go, "Is this something I even want or something I think I want?" Because maybe I actually want to live, and I've talked about this model before. In fact, I think I talked to you about it. A mate of mine, her grandma and four of her friends, female friends, all bought apartments in the same block when they got older and lived out their halcyon days. Start drinking at 4, playing gin and go gin rummy and going to bed at 7. I'm into it, Danny.
Absolutely.
You
Absolutely.
know, maybe that is in terms of ripping up the script, just consider whether or not the script of I've got to get back into dating is one that you want. If it is, then you can do it. If it's not, you don't have to. And
Correct.
certainly don't take, you know, ironically, given this episode, don't take sloppy seconds. Right? Have your list. And I think it's really lovely, actually, and we'll end on this. It's really lovely to also have your list of, like, have that vision. And I don't mean in an Oprah vision board sense because I don't believe in any of that, but have that vision of what would it look like, not if it was perfect, but what is what I'm looking for? What would it look like?
Yeah.
How would I feel? Would my, like, I would say, for example, I made this list and I started dating again. My nervous system would feel settled. Like, I'm such a nerd, but like, that was really important to me to kind of go, I will override my nervous system because I have been historically a people pleaser. So even if I'm feeling stressed, I mustn't be, it's fine because they're lovely.
Yeah.
Whereas now I can go, actually, how do you feel? If you're panicking, and not just like date panicking, if you're actually panicking, your body's telling you something. You know, and you everyone's list will be different, but make a nice list. I'll feel calm. I'll feel adored. They'll look at me like I'm special. I will want to be around them, like whatever it is. I don't mean income and height and all that sort of shit. I mean, how do you want to feel around someone that you love? That's a better checklist, I think.
Yeah, that's lovely.
Yeah. Thank you, Danny Blay. I am going to put all the things in the show notes. Will you come back on for Thirsty Thirds?
If you'll have me, I would love it.
Of course, I'll have you. Of course, I will. And thank you for sharing the emptiness stuff. Like, it's something I'm starting to think about. And given the demographic of this audience, I think it's something a lot of people will be thinking about. And you know, it's interesting, Danny, I know, which I love. We've got some listeners, quite a lot of listeners actually in their 20s and 30s. And I would invite them to think about how it might be for their parents, you know, as they fly the. And that doesn't mean you need to be enmeshed and you don't have to have dinner every night and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, if you could FaceTime, if you could have a dinner occasionally, if you could go away for a weekend every now and then, geez, it would probably mean a lot to them.
Correct.
Yeah. All right, thank you so much, mate.
Love your work.
Yeah, love you too. See ya.
Dear Nelly, I could use some advice, dear Nelly. Yes, some help would be nice, dear Nelly. I'm eager to hear your point of view, dear Nelly. There's a lot to explore, dear Nelly. When you're 40 or more, dear Nelly. So I'm hoping we can talk it through. Dear Nelly, I'm rocking my prime and it's time to get down some. Maybe mess around some. It's never too late to start again, dear Nelly. Won't you hear my request, dear Nelly? With your fabulous guest, dear Nelly. You tell me what you think I should do.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey Miles, thanks for listening to Dear Nelly. Don't be shy. I'd love to hear your questions and comments. To send me like a voicemail recording or an email or whatever, go to dearnellypodcast.com and follow the links and you might just hear me talk about your question or comment or thought bubble in a future episode. Huge thanks to producer Sam Peterson from the Producer Boy Creative Production team and to producer Faye Younger, who in addition to being an excellent producer, is also a brilliant real estate buyer's advocate advocate and can be found at youngerhill.com. Thanks to Acast and all the team, and mostly thank you to you. Without the listeners, I'm just a middle-aged mole talking shit to no one in the ether. Love yous!